Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I am Bill Arnold, part of that sentence. Awfully glad you joined me today. I've got Dr. Paul Meyer with me for the full hour. I had him on a while ago, and it was such a big hit, and so many people called and said, how about more Dr. Paul Meyer? So I said, yeah, I can do that. I just hope I don't mess this hour up, because he's so good at what he does, and he's actually been hosting his own show, a call-in show, for so long that I'm going to try to learn from him today and just figure out how to work the callers and make it the best hour possible. He's written, I think, close to 100 books, I think, and I'll double-check with that in just a minute, but he wrote a book on the breaking free from chemical imbalances that affect your moods, your mind, your life, and your loved ones. It's called Blue Genes. That's G-E-N-E-S. I would figure that you've figured that out by now. He's written a book called Purpose in Our Pain and Experiencing God Outside the Box. I could go on and on with the books he's written, but let's just get into a discussion with him. He's already on our studio line. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Thanks for coming back on the show. We just had so much response the last time you were on. I thought it would be just great to have you back on and let the callers find out what they've got on their minds.
Yeah, this brings back fond memories, you know, because for the last 10 or 15 years when I've done a radio program or a TV program, there's always been a topic. But for 25 years, I was on live radio from noon to 1 Central Time, 5 days a week, to 2 million people a day.
Wow. All right.
And,
so, yeah, I want you to coach me.
Live calling. And, boy, we got some strange calls sometimes, but most of them are really good.
You know? I bet. So, Paul, coach me a little bit. Now, invite my listeners to call and talk to you, if you would.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have long conversations. You know, I'm not going to do therapy with anybody, but I'll take a couple minutes to answer whoever calls and wants to know something about that has to do with Christian psychology. And there wasn't any such thing as Christian psychology when I graduated from Duke Psychiatry back in 1975. And I went and I turned down a couple of real nice lucrative jobs back then to go teach full-time at Dallas Seminary for $12,600 a year. And just had a part-time private practice, but there weren't any books on Christian psychology yet. So each course I taught, I had to write my own book. And so I wrote Christian Child Rearing was for Child Rearing course, and then Happiness Is a Choice was the second one I wrote. And they both ended up selling about a million copies each, and so everything grew out of that. And so in the meantime, I've been able to, you know, I did radio for all those years. I went to countries all over the world and trained them in the area of Christian psychology, which is integrating the scripture with psychology research, not psychological theories, because a lot of those are all wet, you know, but mm-hmm. With psychiatry research. And so now people that are Christians are a lot more willing to get help if they have a genetic problem or if they're just temporarily real, real, real depressed so that they can't go to work or something and they need some help. And then we see about 1,000 people a day at our national chain of Meyer clinics, and only about 20% get medication. The rest get Christian counseling. And so it's just really grown. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad you're giving me a chance today to
this will be fun.
Do live radio again, live call-in.
Yeah.
So people, just call in with any question you got that has to do with Christian psychology, and I'll give you, you know, a brief answer.
Yeah, and if Paul can't answer it, I will, because, you know, I'm here too. All right. All right, Paul, let me take a very short break. I've already got a caller up on the line, and we'll get right back, and we'll get to Diana's question in just a minute. It's 8 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back with Dr. Paul Meyer.
Your prayers matter and are heard by God. When you pray, lives can be changed. Each week, the Faith Radio Prayer Team joins together to pray for relationships to be strengthened, finances to be increased for God's glory, for our leaders to follow God's will, and for so much more. Will you join us? The Faith Radio Prayer Team, made up of hundreds of listeners, receives an email with each week's prayer focus. You can be a part of the Faith Radio Prayer Team by signing up at myfaithradio.com.
Our fall fundraiser known as Share is coming September 11th. Hi, I'm Dick Whitmer, station manager of Faith Radio. Your support of this ministry really does change lives. Give a gift, change a life. It's that simple. If you're not already a member of our monthly support team, would you consider joining? $100 per month or a one-time gift of $1,200 covers the entire cost of a broadcast day. Consider that when you visit myfaithradio.com, and thank you for your support.
It is 10 minutes after the hour. I have Dr. Paul Meyer on our studio line for the full hour. So if you have questions, definitely give us a call, 877-933-2484, about any counseling question you might have. And let's go to Diana from Plymouth. Hello, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I had to call in. I was excited because I really enjoyed last time you were on, Paul. It motivated me to go find some counseling. I also really responded to what you were teaching about serotonin, and I went and got some 5-HTP and am feeling a ton better with that. I am wondering if you have any other natural suggestions to raise dopamine or norepinephrine, knowing that they are also affiliated with mood.
Well, yeah, let me explain this for the people that are listening in our listening family right now. The brain chemicals that keep us sane, happy, relaxed, sleeping good, and all those sorts of things are all built out of foods. And we eat things like what Diane was talking about is tryptophan. So like she got 5-HTP, which is 5-hydroxytryptamine, but that's a type of tryptophan. But we eat things like tryptophan, and like bananas are higher than anything in tryptophan. That's why you never see a depressed monkey. They're always, they eat a lot of bananas, so they're always hugging each other and grooming each other and things like that. Bananas are high in that. And so you eat tryptophan, and you have to have vitamin B6 to carry it in the brain. And then once it's in the brain, our enzyme systems turn that tryptophan into serotonin, S-E-R-O-T-O-N-I-N. And serotonin in our brain is what gives us love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, meekness, and the fruit of the Spirit. And it's really miraculous how God uses the spirit and our soul and our body all together to produce the things that he wants in our lives. And so if our serotonin level is normal, then we do have joy and peace and we're happy. And if we get involved in habitual sin or something, then the guilt will deplete that serotonin, make us depressed. If people drink too much or smoke pot, that depletes serotonin out of the brain, makes them more depressed. And if people hold grudges, even really nice people get depressed because they expect too much out of themselves and hold grudges toward themselves, and that causes serotonin to get depleted. But about 20% of the population, and here's what a lot of Christians didn't realize 40 years ago when I started out, is that about 20% of the population inherits reuptake sites that suck up too much of the serotonin out of the brain, and so they inherit depression. And so they may not always be depressed. It may come and go, or they may always be depressed from the time they're born on, regardless of circumstances, regardless of their devotions or anything else. Or they may get bipolar, where they go up and down like a yo-yo or other things. What you eat can make a big difference, like you're talking about, for people that just have real mild blahs. There was a study done at a Kansas medical school where they used a week-old antidepressant called Luvox, but they They took a couple hundred people that were real depressed and did a double-blind study. That means the doctors didn't know who was getting what, and the patients didn't know who was getting what. A third of them got an empty pill that they thought was an antidepressant. A third got what you took, what you're taking, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which is just any form of tryptophan, and B6. And then a third got Luvox, the antidepressant. And the Luvox did do statistically significantly better than the empty pill. But the tryptophan in B6 did statistically significantly better than that antidepressant. It wouldn't do as good as modern antidepressants. And so what you eat can influence how you feel to a large extent. And rather than, you know, have a whole show on what foods do which chemical, I listed them all. If you get the book that Bill mentioned when he introduced me, it's Blue Jeans, you know, G-E-N-E-S, Tyndale published it. And it's on I think it's chapter 10. There's a whole chapter on what foods you can eat to build up each of those the main chemicals in your brain that make you happy are serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, which is the pleasure chemical, and GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid. But you know, we just call it GABA, G-A-B-A. And so those are the four main chemicals in our brain, and like I said, 80% of people inherit normal levels, but 20% will have one or another of those messed up just genetically. And the ones that have that messed up need to take medication the rest of their lives, and they'll live a totally normal life as long as the other things in their life are straight. So I would recommend people get that book, and it'll tell you about, you know, who needs medication, who doesn't, what are the spiritual causes and emotional causes and all that. But if you read that book, that chapter, it'll tell what foods. If you women and men that do cooking that are listening, and Bill's listening family today, if you want to know how to cook really good, healthy foods for your brain, then look that up and it'll tell you.
That sounds terrific. That's a great answer, Paul. And thank you very much, Diana, for your question. I've got Lewis on the line, but I'm going to run to break real quick because we're running out of time, and I want to make sure I give Paul a nice chance to answer to Lewis. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Dr. Paul Meyer is my guest. Feel free to call or text or email me with any question you have for him. They're starting to come in. 877-933-2484 is the number. That also is the text number. So if you want to text me, 877-933-2484, I'll be happy to ask your question to Dr. Meyer on your behalf. So we'll be back in just a minute. It is 18 minutes after the hour. Dr. Paul Meyer is my guest for the full hour, so please call or text or email me with your question. I've got a caller, Lewis, on the line from Duluth, Minnesota. Hello, Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello.
Thanks for waiting.
Yeah. So this year has been unlike any other in my life. A lot of loss and grief this year. I lost a brother February 23rd in a nursing home. He lived with my mom up there. And the day of his funeral, my oldest brother in town ended up going to the hospital, and he died 57 days after my other brother. And just 2 months ago, I lost my mom also. So I've been dealing with three deaths in 121 days, two brothers and my mom.
Oh, Lewis, I'm so sorry.
And they all knew the Lord, so I know that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, but my heart is still sad, and I'm in the process of grieving still. But people, well-meaning Christian friends and co-workers are like, well, get on with your life, get back to, you know, find a new normal. Okay, enough already, but they haven't been in my shoes. And I'm planning on going to a grief support group tonight. I see a counselor tomorrow. I've been going to the gym to get a regular workout in a couple times a week and getting in a workout to try to just naturally get I don't know if it'd be dopamine or by exercising, getting a natural lift and And when I do my workout, I don't, I'm isolated. I can just think and be alone, away from the phone, away from other people for a lot of the, that time when I'm in the pool. But I don't know, I don't want to rely on medication, but I'm just looking for some input and some direction.
Thanks, Lewis. Paul?
Yeah, thank you, Lewis. Yeah, that's a great call. That I'm sure this will help an awful lot of you know, hundreds or even thousands of people that are listening that are going through a lot of losses too. And when you go through and you're doing wonderful things to work through this too, the support group, the individual therapy, and going to the gym and exercising. Those things all help. When we when we have a lot of losses, even if we have one, you know, big loss, we can't believe it happened. You know, it shocks us, and we, you know, we just don't want to believe it happened. And then once we accept that it happened, then our natural reaction is to get angry, and we get angry at, you know, whoever we blame for that happening. If, you know, if somebody died because of alcoholism or some other reason, or because the doctor messed up, or, you know, then we tend to get mad at, or a car accident, you know, we get mad at people usually. And then usually it doesn't matter how committed a Christian we are, usually there gets to be a little bit of anger toward God too for allowing it to happen, because God could have prevented it, but he could have prevented his son from dying too, and he didn't, you know. But and when somebody dies, from God's point of view, the Bible says that God celebrates and delights in the death of his saints. So when we die, instead of, from his perspective, instead of, he feels sorry for us, and he hugs us and grieves with us. But from his perspective, he's saying, you know, oh, great, here comes another one, you know, and one of my kids, you know. And but we get mad at God often, and we may not be aware of it, but usually we do. Then we have anger toward inward, and we think, oh man, you know, why is God doing this to me? I must have done something wrong. Or, and we have false guilt. And then we have genuine grief, where we say, I know they're in a better place, but I miss them, you know, and it's still a loss. You know, and you'll have well-intentioned people, like you said, that'll walk up to you and say, oh, I know just how you feel. Well, no, they don't, not unless it just happened to them too. Or they'll say, They'll misuse Romans 8:28. Well, all things work together for good to those who love God, you know, or they'll say, don't cry, he's in heaven, don't grieve. And those are well-intentioned people, but they're all giving you the wrong advice, because the Bible says to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. So if we see somebody weeping, you know, like you feel the sadness right now, you know, our duty as a fellow believer is to grieve with you, to feel, you know, give you a hug. If I was your friend and I was there with you, I'd give you a hug. And if you started crying, I'd be crying with you. And then comes resolution. So if you're aware of those stages, you can go through them quicker. Like if you realize you're really mad at somebody, I saw a lady today who was just real depressed and bordering on suicidal. And because her husband had divorced her, and somebody else had died, and so she had several losses this past year too. And she said, there's no reason for me to live. There's no reason for me to live. And I explained to her, yeah, there is a reason for you to live. You know, you can work your way through this, get some counseling and things, and when you work through it, live for others. You know, find out something you can do that'll contribute to other people. I told her what brings me real joy in my life. I go home at the end of the day realizing I've helped people to suffer less. So I would say, without going on too long here, I would say, Lewis, do what you're doing, you know, the support group, getting therapy, because the more you talk about what you're feeling sad about, a shared burden is half a burden, the more relieved you're going to feel. And getting some exercise helps. It would be good to have a friend or two that you know, even one that you can hang out with, or your wife if you're married, that you can go do things with and spill your guts to, and just think out loud with, and again, a shared burden is half a burden, And then if you're mad at God, tell him about it. He knows it anyway, you know, and he just will give you a hug and say, I understand. And but when you realize these stages are all normal, to get really mad, to have false guilt, and then genuine grief. Don't feel guilty about feeling sad and feeling like crying. That's a wonderful thing to do. There's a verse in the Bible that says God counts our tears and puts them in a bottle. I mean, that makes me cry. Just quoting
it does.
That
That's beautiful.
That he loves much.
Beautiful, Paul.
Yeah, and if you'll do that, you'll work through this, and you'll be stronger in the end than you were before. And it's sad when we go through tough times. You know what, though, as a psychiatrist, when I ask people that are really old like me, I'm 73, you know, so I feel like a 45-year-old, but I'm 73. But when I ask people my age, you know, that are 70 or above, I say, if I say, what's the time in your life that you experienced the most growth emotionally and spiritually, almost always they'll say, you know, during the worst crisis of their life, the hardest year. This will probably be the hardest year of your life. And as a result of going through this, and you're doing a great job of doing it, as a result of going through this, you'll be stronger than you ever were before, and you'll be able to comfort other people. There's in Proverbs 1, it talks about it. I memorized a bunch of the chapters in Proverbs, and when I worked on Proverbs 1 and memorized it, I thought, it's saying the same thing over and over again. Why does it say? It says, get knowledge, get wisdom, get understanding, get, you know, and it's like a book of synonyms, you know. And I thought, you know, why is it saying the same thing over and over again? But then I've got a seminary degree, but I quit taking the Hebrew course, so I don't know how to do that. But I looked at a concordance, and one of the words in there for understanding is a word that we actually get miscarriage from, but it means when you've suffered through a loss like you have right now, Lewis, and then you're able to help other people in the future that are suffering because you really can empathize with them. And so going through suffering enables you to be a lot better for the rest of your life at helping other people who are suffering. And people who have never suffered losses, you know, they can mean well, and they might be able to help some, but they can't help as much as somebody that's been through it. So anyway, you're doing a good job. The things that you're doing, just keep doing those, and allow yourself, when you feel like crying, cry. There'll be times that you feel just fine. You think you're past it, but it'll hit you in waves. Mm-hmm. And I remember when my dad died, I felt great. And then 5 years later, I was getting ready to open Christmas presents with my kids. And all of a sudden, we hadn't started opening. I felt real sad and went in the other room to figure out why I prayed, and it was because I missed my dad. So I cried a couple minutes. I felt great the rest of the day.
We're up against a hard break here, so we do need to jump. But we'll be back in just a minute. And if you want to get in a question for Dr. Paul Meyer, 877-933-2484. We've got some text coming in and some emails, so we'll cover those in the next half hour. But we have time for your question, 877-933-2484. 2484. Dr. Paul Meyer will be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Bill Arnold talking to Dr. Paul Meyer. We've got him for the whole hour, and the first half hour has already flown by. If you have a question, you want to get on the program and ask Dr. Meyer a question, 877-933-2484. Easy to remember, 877-933-2484. So, Paul, here's a question that came in on the text line. What vitamins or foods naturally help with anxiety?
Well, there's a whole bunch, and so they really need to get the book Blue Jeans and read that chapter.
Okay,
it would take us. You know, there's just a whole bunch. But I'll tell you real briefly that vitamin B6 is real important because that carries the good brain chemicals from the stomach up to the brain, and vitamin B12 is real important because if that's low, you can be real depressed. And folic acid is real important, and you got to have the right kind of of folic acid. So that's real important. Those are probably the most important vitamins.
Mm-hmm. Another caller on the line. She wishes to remain anonymous. Welcome to the show.
Let me tell you one more thing before we get to the next. Hang on just a minute. For people who have a, you know, we have clients that get genetic testing, and it shows which medications they're more likely to respond to, but it also shows if they are good or bad responders to folic acid, and if they are poor responders to it, which is about like 40% of the population, then there's a place where they can go online and get that, and it's and I don't get any cut out of this, so I'm not promoting anything, but it's www.methylpro, methylpro.com, methylpro.com, and they have methylfolate capsules, and it costs $75 for 90 capsules. That'll last you 3 months. You take one a day, so that can make a big difference. And if some people are stuck in depression because of their nutrition, then that's one thing that can make a big difference. Okay,
I appreciate it. Okay, now we're back to you. You have a
okay. Who's on the line?
An anonymous caller. She'd like to ask a question.
Okay.
Hi, I have a college age son who's heading back to school out of state in a couple weeks, and he's been struggling with some depression episodes. And I'm wondering, he has a good support network there, but I'm wondering what we could do to help equip him in these last few weeks before he leaves. And also, what are some questions and things that we could be doing throughout the year to make sure that he's doing okay?
Okay, that's a good question. I'd sit down with him and let him, if that were my son, I'd sit down with him and say, what are your plans? What are your plans in the next few, is there anything that you're planning on doing in the next few weeks to make sure you're getting out of this? Is he getting better? I mean, is he getting out of his depression?
It just kind of comes in waves. It comes in waves, and he doesn't really know where it's coming from, but all of a sudden he'll just feel really sad.
Then he needs to, he really ought to see a psychiatrist for an evaluation. That's what I would want him to do. If I saw him, for example, I'd ask him questions for an hour to see whether it's, when people say it's out of the blue and life's good, and then you're happy one time and you're not happy another time. A lot of people inherit that. You know, it can be a mild bipolar tendencies or something. Does he have any bipolar relatives or not?
No.
Okay. But it can be, if it was a genetic type of mood swings, you know, I'd put him on Lamictal, which takes about a month to get you cured from it. But if it's genetic ups and downs, he'd have to take that the rest of his life. But there's a medicine called Lamictal that I'd put him on, and he'd be feeling great by the time he got to school, and he'd feel great all the way through school, and it would make him quit having those ups and downs if it was due to bipolar tendencies or something. And for a lot of people, when they have ups and downs that are just out of the blue, that does sound genetic to me. When people are happy and then they break up with their girlfriend and they get real sad, well, that's not genetic. That's grief, you know, or anger or you know, things like that get you depressed. But do you know if he's sleeping through the night? Is he waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and can't get back to sleep, or having other things like that? Or
he typically sleeps well. I can ask him about that, though.
Okay, people who have trouble falling asleep. Usually they're worried about they're having a lot of anxiety and they're worried about things. But people who are serotonin depleted, that means if their serotonin is low, either from genetics or from depression, you know, because of, you know, a lot of, you know, buried guilt or anger or things like that. But if the serotonin is low, people wake up at about 3 a.m. and it takes them an hour to get back to sleep. And that'll happen about 4 nights a week, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 nights a week. And that's one way to tell if somebody's clinically depressed. If he saw a psychiatrist, the psychiatrist would be able to tell whether he is fine and needs an antidepressant or not. And if he needs one, then he might just need one temporarily. But if he's having ups and downs that come out of the blue, that does sound genetic, and which is fine. I mean, he'll live a totally normal life if he gets on something that corrects it. Just like people who inherit hypothyroidism, you know, are going to get real depressed, by the way. If you inherit a low thyroid hormone, then you have dry skin, hair loss, constipation, you're cold all the time, colder than your friends, but you also put on weight and get real tired and get depressed. So I have some people that come here as a new client, and when I ask them those questions, they have all those symptoms. Everything else in their life is fine. I tell them, go see your doctor, get on thyroid medicine, and you know, come back and see me in a month, and they come back and they're feeling fine. They don't need to see me anymore.
Well, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And, Paul, another great answer. I've got another caller that said, I'm going to try to put this in a concise question here. She is having doubts about her thinking. She's got some bad patterns in how she thinks, and she's gotten so self-absorbed that it's hard to simply enjoy the presence of God because she's so busy thinking about what she's thinking about. So she's got a thinking issue, and her question is,
okay,
how do I trust God with my thoughts?
Okay, I'm writing this down here.
I wrote it down too.
So I won't forget.
She said she feels like she's lost the right to claim God's promises because of her weird thoughts.
Yeah, and she's listening to us right now?
I believe so, yes. She texted the question in.
Okay. Well, you can't lose God, first of all. You can't lose God because of your thoughts or because of anything else that you do. Ephesians 1 says, when you trust the Lord, you're sealed by the Holy Spirit of God until the day of redemption, until the day you get to heaven. And I just, you know, that, forgive me, those of you who believe you can lose your salvation, but I don't. I'm not one of those. And God totally understands our humanity, and he, you know, he understands what's going on, and he doesn't reject us. He never pushes us away. But if I could talk to her, was it a her or a him? Do you know?
It
doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I believe
it doesn't really matter. That's
a her.
Whoever it is, if I could talk to that person, I would ask, have you had this your whole life? Because there's a thing called obsessive compulsive tendencies, and that's what she's exhibiting. And some people, from the time they're born, they have obsessive thoughts, and they have a hard time not thinking about the same things over and over again, worrying about things that don't matter, worrying about germs to an extreme, you know, where they, you know, even, you know, wear gloves and things. And they also have, and that's from a low serotonin level also, and they also do things like they have to do things in twos, they have to check the doors four times a night, they have to do things in a certain order, they count things when they're driving, you know, when they go to a restaurant, they have to have their back against the wall. When they go to a movie or a church, they have to sit on the aisle, and they have to drive and not let other people drive, and they don't like crowded elevators and all those things. And I put them on a serotonin medicine, and a month later they're normal. All those things just disappear. So some people are born with it, and these kind of obsessive thoughts that she's describing, and medication makes it go away. And if she took the medicine until she's 80, and never had those again, and then quit taking the medicine when she's 80, they'd be back within a month. So, because it's, again, it's genetic. Now, some people will not have those kinds of thoughts their whole life, and then all of a sudden they'll get them, and that can be from going through a crisis. You know, maybe if there's a car accident that really scares them, and somebody died in it that they know or something, then they can get real obsessive compulsive for a while until they get counseling and get over it.
Yeah,
and then And then some people get it who are getting ready to lose touch with reality. One out of 33 people in America will lose touch with reality sometimes in their lives, and they'll have those kind of thoughts before they lose touch with reality, and a dopamine medicine would get that back to normal. So, again, she really ought to see a psychiatrist so he can find out what it is. I mean, it could also be – I mean, you know, most problems really are spiritual problems. I'm making it all sound like everything's genetic, but the questions we've had so far – have been Lewis's wasn't a genetic thing; it was about grief. But it can be, you know, a spiritual issue too that gives us a lot of doubts and strange thoughts and things.
Mm-hmm.
But well, a counselor would help figure that out, but a psychiatric workup would be helpful.
She added, this listener added a couple additional thoughts to the text line that I'm looking at, and she said that she has not had these thoughts her whole life. She says, I just feel like I'm weird, and I don't know if I have depression or if I'm just overthinking. I just want to trust God. I haven't had it all my life, and I don't want to have depression.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, good. I mean, if it was all her life, it's not that big a deal. I mean, because the medicine would make it go away anyway. But if she hasn't had it all her life, then probably counseling with a Christian counselor. Now, you can go to a psychiatrist of any faith if he's really good. You know, I encourage people to call the secretary of the largest real good evangelical church, though, and not the pastor. Talk to the secretary. She's the one that knows what's happening. You know? And ask her, who do you all refer to? What psychiatrist do you guys refer to? And so they'll probably have a Christian psychiatrist. But if you're going to counseling, be sure you see a Christian, because you don't want to have somebody lead you astray. But if she got counseling, she could figure out what it is that's eating away at her on the inside. Mark Twain said, it's not what you eat that gives you indigestion. It's what's eating you. So there's probably something eating away at her. And if she talked about it, it would go away. And so a counselor would probably help her more than any medication would.
Yeah, again, great counsel. Yeah, great counsel, Paul. If you have a question for Dr. Paul Meyer, 877-933-2484. We've got time for a couple of questions, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, I still have some texts that are coming in, Paul, so I've got lots to send your way when we return. It's 15 minutes till the top of the hour. Welcome back to the show. Dr. Paul Meyer is my guest and has been the whole hour. And if you missed any of this, you're going to want to go back. He gave almost a little mini seminar on grief and suffering in the first part of the hour, which I can't wait to go back and listen to again. But, Paul, I still got all kinds of questions coming in.
Okay, I'm going to try to give shorter answers so we can cover a few more.
Well, that's fine. It's so thorough. You have so much wisdom. Here's a question. A caller named Leanne, do you have any tips for finding a trustworthy Christian psychologist, someone who's truly going to get the three-pronged causes, genetics, decisions, environment of depression? Trust is a huge factor in getting help.
Yep. They can call. First, they ought to call our clinic, 1-888-7-CLINIC. 1-888-7-CLINIC, and we try to keep track of really good Christian psychologists and therapists that we know of around the country. But so try us, and if we don't know, then call 1-800-A-FAMILY. 1-800-A-FAMILY. Focus on the Family gets thousands of calls every month requesting counseling, and in order for them to refer to somebody, they have to fill out this long questionnaire on their beliefs, and they even call their pastor to check on them, and so the people that they refer to are really great. And then, but the simplest thing you can do is what I mentioned for finding a psychiatrist. I think one of the best things that I encourage my clients to do. We get people that come to our day hospital from all around the country, even other countries, and then when they go home, they say, "How do I find a good counselor?" I say, "Call the secretary or the pastor of the largest evangelical church in your area and see who they recommend for, like as a psychologist or for a therapist, who do they recommend for professional therapy? Because whoever has had really good results, the pastor will keep sending people to the ones that have really good results. So those are three places you can go.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I have another caller on the line, wishes to remain anonymous. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Dr. Meyer.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Hello there.
Yes, you have a question.
I've been married for 36 years to my wife, and it's like a personality. It's like her genetic personality or just her makeup. But you try to reason with her, and you always turn. It always turns back, and it's always argumentative and obstinate, and you can't get past that.
Yeah,
and in the past, in fact, I heard a radio program or a person that had a clinic or whatever, and they said it was a brain dysfunction, and they could solve it. And I was going to go to that clinic. And then I heard about your clinic when you were with another person, and you hear about all these solutions, but then, like I said, when you try to discuss something or try to help her, it's always a fight. It's always,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
And
okay.
Once again, in my entire marriage, everything is just spiraling out of control, because besides that, and this is what I don't hear, in fact, from people who give advice. I never hear this, and I'm going to drop it on you. But once again, because of all of this, because of her demeanor and her just out, you know, she's morbidly obese and killing herself. So.
Okay. Okay.
I'd love.
Yeah, you love her no matter what, right?
Well, that's the hardest part. The hardest part is, you know, and the problem is, Paul, is that Satan has divided our marriage and our home, and it's just been sheer hell here, basically.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I could spend a whole hour on this one. Three things. I'm going to make this short and sweet, but still try to cover the bases here. Three things determine how we turn out: our genes, our environment, and our choices. So hers could be a genetic thing, and I'm going to come back to that. It could be environmental, where she grew up, with a lousy example. You know, a lot of our personality is formed by the sixth birthday. But thank God we can change no matter how old we are with God's help and with therapy and relationships. But she may have had a real tough childhood where, maybe mom was a bully over dad, and so she just got used to that growing up. And it can come from, she could be making really poor choices becoming more arrogant and narcissistic by her choices. But in marriage counseling, if you and her saw a really good Christian marital therapist, he could probably figure it out. But if it's genetic, now some people, the traits that you're describing are paranoid traits, okay? Some people inherit. I've had cases that came here like that, where the husband or the wife, one of them would be, where they're always right and you're always wrong, and they're condescending, and they have to be in control, and they ascribe evil motives to others, so if you do something nice for them, they'll think it's, for a negative reason, you must have some alternative motive or you wouldn't be being nice to me right now. So they ascribe evil motives to others, and they're kind of saying they're self-righteous, and they're always right and you're always wrong. And those are paranoid traits. So and that can either be from having a lot of abuse growing up and having a lot of repressed anger, but it can also be genetic. And I've had some cases like that. Where I put in a dopamine imbalance is what causes people to be paranoid, or if she thinks people don't like her, even if they do, and things like that. But if I put somebody like that on a dopamine medicine, if it is genetic, then about 8 days later they're really nice, and those things just disappear. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I get people that are extremely shy and can't their whole lives and can't get out with any groups, and they can barely drag themselves to school, and I can put them on a GABA medicine, and 4 days later they're normal. They're totally normal, and they can go out and go to a soccer game and everything else. So it's amazing what we can do with modern medications. But if it's not genetic, the medicine wouldn't do her any good. Christian counseling might do her good, but she'll probably just get mad at the counselor when he tells her the truth. If somebody's paranoid, it's really hard to get anywhere with them. If people are delusional, I had an airline pilot that became paranoid, delusional, and my pastor said he could cure anything with just using the Bible. So I brought him in, and I said, okay, try it on this guy. And so he persuaded, and the pilot was a Christian, and my pastor persuaded him that the delusions that he had contradicted Scripture. And the pilot said, and to think all these years I thought the Bible was true. So he gave up his belief in the Bible, rather than believing that he was wrong. So you're in a tough spot. You're in a tough spot. And there may not be anything you can do I mean, but if she would go see somebody and listen, either a Christian counselor or a psychiatrist, and they could find out and she would accept the help, she could get normal with, no matter what the reason is. She either needs spiritual help, emotional help, or genetic help, and I can't tell, but she's definitely paranoid.
Mm. Appreciate the call, and it's a tough one for sure. Paul, I've got another caller. I've got a daughter, 18 and a half years old, been using marijuana for the last couple of years, now living in public housing and doesn't really want to have contact with me, avoids me. And I'm a believer, and I'm torn on how to help her now since I'm the bad guy because I tried to have her and her local pot dealer arrested. So now all of a sudden, I'm the bad guy. So maybe counsel as to how to deal with that parent who's in grief.
Well, she's doing the right thing. You have to have tough love, and I would have done the same thing under the same circumstances, and somehow let her know, hey, I love you no matter what, but you don't support her, you know. You don't send her money. You don't. I told my kids when you graduate from high school, you have. Now, this is the old days. You know, not people live with their parents till they're 43. But I told them when they were 18 and they graduate from high school, they had till the end of the summer to get a job and move out and support themselves unless they went to college. And I had one child that went to college and got into pot and smoked pot. And pot is really, really bad for your brain. People can go to Amen Clinic, A-M-E-N. clinic.com and see pictures of the holes in the brain of people that smoke pot every day. But anyway, she got into pot and flunked out of college and called me up and said, Dad, you got to send me money. I don't have any food. And she was staying in a state park in a tent. And I said, you're just going to have to get whatever job you can. I'm sorry, I love you, but I'm not going to send you any money. And you're going to have to get whatever job you can really quick so that you won't starve to death. Now you're in a park and there's bears there. So if they can find food, you can too, you know, go pick some berries or something. And the only job she could get immediately was shoveling manure out of outhouses. So for 2 weeks, she shoveled manure out of outhouses. And then she called me back and said, okay, Dad, I'll give up pot. I won't date guys that do. I'm ready to go back to college.
Yeah.
She went back to college. She went back to college and got straight A's all the way through and got a $250,000 scholarship at one of the top universities in America and got two PhDs.
Wow.
But if I would have sent her money, she'd still be a pothead today.
That's amazing. So, all right, Paul.
The lady's doing the best she can.
We're running out of time. Here's another question. What can you recommend for someone who's having trouble getting a good night's sleep?
If people are having trouble sleeping, again, it could be a lot of different causes. It could be sleep apnea. And so you'd see a sleep doctor. I've got sleep apnea and have to wear a machine every night. Or it could be a depression, because usually when people, if they haven't had trouble sleeping and now they're having, if they're having trouble falling asleep, it's probably anxiety, and counseling would get rid of that. But if they're waking up in the middle of the night, can't get back to sleep, that's probably depression. And they probably ought to see a psychiatrist. I'll mention before we run out of time that if people who are listening, if they have a severe problem, like they're feeling so depressed or so anxious that they can't go to work or they have to drop out of college or something, they can come to our day program where they stay right here in a hotel and they get 7 hours a day, 5 days a week for 3 weeks of therapy. And we can get anybody over anything in about 3 weeks. So instead of 9 months or a year of therapy, we pack it all into 3 weeks and we just dig and probe and get it all out.
Yeah.
And somebody sees them every day to give them medication if they need it.
Paul, thanks so much. You're an absolute delight. Love to have you back on the program. That wraps up our show for the day. Have a great night, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.